The pre-K through 12 appropriations subcommittee will come to roll. Or come to order, I'm sorry. Kiva, will you please call roll?
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck? Here. Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Representatives Alvarez?
Here, ma'am.
Gracie Davis?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Daniels?
Here.
Dunkley?
Here.
Garcia? Gonzalez Pittman?
Present.
Lopez? Michael?
Here.
Rizzo?
Here.
Temple?
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Members, I realize we are at lunchtime, so I promise we will get through this as efficiently as possible. And right now we have House Bill 195 by Representative Casello, followed by a presentation with the overview of the Florida Education Finance Program, or FEFP. So let's start with Representative Casello. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Good morning, board members. I'd like to acknowledge Chair Tomko for allowing this good bill to be heard, and Vice Chair Tuck, and Ranking Member. I also would be remiss not to thank my prime co-sponsor, Representative Cross, and Representative Lopez for co-sponsoring this bill. Also, before we start, I'd like to wish our own, Representative Dan Dilley, a happy birthday today. Members, as you all know, every year Florida faces the prospect of a grid-disrupting natural disasters. Hurricanes Ian and Nicole alone caused an incredible amount of damages, totaling over $60 billion. Thankfully, Florida has a robust statewide emergency shelter plan that helps keep our residents safe. For Hurricanes Ian and Nicole, the Division of Emergency Management stated that 256 shelters opened up for over 33,000 Floridians and were operational for a total of 83 days. District public schools are the primary source of emergency shelters in Florida during tropical storms, hurricanes, and other related emergencies. The statewide emergency shelter plan calculated that 97% of our shelters are educational facilities, but only around 100 have solar energy and battery storage systems. During Hurricane Ian, we know from the Division Emergency Management that over 6 shelters in Charlotte County experienced power disruption. You can only imagine if you're going to a shelter to be safe and we have a disruption at the shelter. When our residents seek shelter in these facilities, they expect at the very least to be kept safe and have access to power. It is because of this goal that I'm presenting this bill to you today. The cost per student station is a funding formula that limits the school districts can spend on construction. Districts cannot exceed that CPSS. HB 195 will exempt from the cost per student station any cost less than $2 million for upgrades that improve the capability of an educational facility and serve as an emergency shelter. Eligible upgrades are limited to those necessary for an area to be designated as an enhanced hurricane protection area, electrical and standby emergency power systems, renewable energy source devices, and energy storage devices. We have made exceptions to the CPSS in the past, specifically school security upgrades in the wake of the horrific Parkland shooting. We just observed the anniversary yesterday. This would continue allowing the exemptions only for the hardware that improves public safety. This bill will allow energy savings in our schools and make our communities more resilient. Now, this is the bill. I urge your favorable vote. Just as a little reminder, this bill went through 3 committees last year and passed all 3 committees, and hoping for the favorable support again this session.
Thank you, Rep. Casello. Seeing no amendments, are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, is there anyone wishing to testify? I believe we have. We have Bush Rester with the Sierra Club. In support. Okay, we'll count you.
Thank you. Dave Cullen for Sierra Club, and I'll be very brief. I want to thank the sponsors for filing the bill and Madam Chair for putting it on the agenda. We appreciate that. This bill is a common sense measure that takes advantage of the advantages of distributed generation, which were so clearly elucidated by the experience of Babcock Ranch during Ian. This is a great bill. We urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Karen Mazzalo with Florida PTA waving in support. We have David Fabis with Children of Florida, wishes to appear in person. An opponent of the bill. Next, we have Shovik Sua with Jen Cleo waving in support. Seeing no further testimony, Rep. Costello, is there debate?
Debate.
Ranking Member Williams.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I want to thank Rep. Costello for bringing this bill forward. It's a very good bill, and a partnership is very important when we're working for our community to make it better for the people that we serve. I really appreciate you putting this bill forth. I just wish we had additional fundings for all schools to be included.
Any further debate? Seeing none, Rep. Costello, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Chair, if I may have my prime co-sponsor, Rep. Cross,
you're recognized.
Give the closing. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Tomko, Vice Chair Tuck, Ranking Member Williams, and committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to close on this good bill and for Rep. Costello for bringing it so far last year in the session. Last September, when Hurricane Ian was approaching our state, I personally went and visited one of the shelters in my local community. This was Gibbs High School in St. Petersburg, and I wanted to experience firsthand what it was like for the residents and the families who were using the shelters. I specifically chose one that was pet-friendly because I know that's important to residents in my district as well. So I loaded up my dog, Cooper, and we went through the check-in process, went and talked with people who were using the shelter as well as the many volunteers that were there. And while we were so blessed and fortunate not to have a direct hit in the Tampa Bay area, I felt so comforted knowing that the people there were well fed, they were well cared for, and that they were safe. We know that disruption during hurricanes can add to the emotional and the physical toll of the residents. And so by allowing our school districts to make these upgrades, we're ensuring that the people in the communities will have some sense of normalcy during disruptions and able to make those contact with their loved ones. So I would appreciate your favorable support on this bill. It's good for our schools, it's good for our communities, and it's good for resiliency. Thank you.
Representative Costello and Cross, having closed on the bill, Kiva, please call roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes, ma'am.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Garcia? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
15 yeas, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, show House Bill 195 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, members, our second and last agenda item is an overview of the Florida Education Finance Program, or FEFP. As you'll remember from the budget overview presented at our first subcommittee in January, the FEFP represents 74% of the total pre-K through 12 fiscal year 22 through 23 budget. Because of its size and its obvious importance, I think it's essential that we all have a basic understanding of what makes up the FEFP. To many, the FEFP is a complex series of calculations and formulas that, at best, is difficult to understand. In reality, while some of the individual FEFP formulas are complex and challenging, the funding for the FEFP is really quite simple. It's based on the total number and type of students enrolled in Florida's public school system. The FEFP was established in 1973 as the state's model for funding public school education. Over the past 50 years, the overall basis for calculating the FEFP has essentially remained unchanged. But what has changed is our state's expansion of school choice, and in particular, non-public school choice funded in the FEFP. The FEFP is comprised of two types of revenues. We have the state revenue, which is derived from three different funding sources. First being general revenue fund, which is comprised of several state taxes and selected fees, with the sales tax being the largest contributor to this fund. Second is the educational enhancement or lottery trust fund, which is comprised of the net proceeds from the lottery ticket sales and slot machine revenues. The third is the state school trust fund, which is comprised of the state or the funds from the sale of unclaimed property that has reverted to the state. The second type is local revenue, which is generated from property taxes levied by the 67 school districts. There are two authorized non-voted millages for school districts. The first is the required local effort, or RLE. To participate in the FEFP, a school must levy the millage and at the rate set for it in the FEFP. The second is the discretionary local effort, or DLE. School districts elect to levy this millage, and the legislature determines in the FEFP the maximum millage rate that a school district can levy. This amount has been 0.748 mills for several years, and all school districts levy the full amount. For fiscal year 22 through 23, the total FEFP amount is $24.5 billion, which is comprised of $13.6 billion in state revenue and $10.9 billion in local revenue. This slide shows a five-year funding history of the FEFP. The important takeaway is that while the total FEFP funding has increased by $3.5 billion, or 16%, in the past 5 years, the number of students has increased by 5%, and the funds per student by 11%. I think it's fair to say that the increases to the total FEFP have been outpaced the increases in the number of students. On slide six, if we deconstruct the FEFP, we'll see that it is made up of two primary components. The first component is called the base FEFP funding. The base FEFP represents 60% of the total FEFP funding. Its calculation is fairly straightforward and is based on the number and type of FTE students. We start with unweighted FTE students. This is simply the total number of students funded in the FEFP. Looking at the current fiscal year, that total number is just under 3 million students. Unweighted FTE are converted into weighted FTE students, and here is why. There are seven statutorily defined K through 12 education programs, ranging from basic programs to exceptional student education, or ESE, programs. Program cost factors, or weights, are established to ensure that each education program receives an equitable share of FEFP funds relative to its cost per student, meaning it costs more to provide the necessary educational resources to students with exceptionalities than basic students. So current year weighted FTE students is just over 3.2 million. To finish the calculation of the base FEFP, the number of weighted FTE students is multiplied by the base allocation, or BSA, and the district cost differential, or DCD. The BSA amount is annually determined by the legislature and represents the minimum amount of funds each student generates in the FEFP. That's how the base FEFP is calculated, and for the current fiscal year, it equals just over $15 billion. The second component of the FEFP is categoricals. Categoricals are individual allocations made in the FEFP, and for the fiscal year 22 through 23 FEFP, there are 17. There are two different types of categoricals. The first type either has a district or a student eligibility requirement that qualifies the district to receive the funding. The nine categoricals listed in the chart on the slide represent the type of categorical. For example, a school district has to have fewer than a certain number of FTE students to qualify for the sparsity supplement, and only students enrolled in a juvenile justice education program qualify for the DJJ supplemental allocation. On slide 8, it shows the second type of categorical, which all school districts receive and were created as a result of a statutorily established funding policy. The chart shows the 8 categoricals that fall into this type that are currently funded in the FEFP. So to calculate the FEFP's total amount, the 2 main components, the base FEFP funding and the categoricals, are simply added together. In my 2 prior terms in the legislature, and certainly as a member of this subcommittee during my first term, I quickly learned that school districts generally advocate for increases in the base FEFP, primarily to base student allocation, over any increases to categoricals. Why? Simply because several of the categoricals require school districts to expend the allocated funds on the specific services or items authorized in statute. The base FEFP provides school districts with greater operational flexibility. On slide 10, the last major function of the FEFP that I want to make sure you all understand is this. The FEFP is calculated several times throughout the fiscal year for a very simple reason. Students move around. They can move from one school district to another district. They can start at a public school and transfer to a private, or maybe even decide to be homeschooled. For these reasons, the FEFP is calculated 5 times throughout the fiscal year, and the bi-monthly distribution of a school district state FEFP is adjusted after each of these calculations. So this slide is an important one to remember, members, because it shows the 5 times the FEFP is recalculated throughout the year. The first calculation is actually done by us, the legislature, and it is used in the conference report of the GAA. This calculation is based on the forecasted number of FTE students as adopted by the Education Estimating Conference and signed off by all school districts. The 1st July distribution of the FEFP is based on this calculation. The second calculation is done after the Department of Education receives the certified tax roll from the Department of Revenue. The tax roll used to calculate the required local effort in the GAA is forecasted 1, and when the certified tax roll is completed in July, the FEFP is recalculated. The second calculation is used for the 2nd July FEFP distribution through December. The first time an actual count of students is done is in October through the FTE survey. Based on the results of this survey, the FEFP is recalculated to reflect any increases or decreases between the forecasted and the actual number of students. Starting in January through April, the results of the 3rd calculation of the FEFP is used for purposes of distributing the FEFP to school districts. We count actual students again in February, and the results of this FTE survey are used to recalculate the FEFP. May through June, FEFP distributions are based on the results of the 4th calculation of the FEFP. And the final, or 5th, calculation is completed upon receipt of the June FTE survey, which primarily involves DJJ and virtual FTE students. Since the fiscal year has ended, any adjustments resulted from this calculation are made in the following fiscal year. And so, members, the takeaway is this. Recalculating the FEFP throughout the school year allows for the funding to appropriately follow the student. Members, my goal today is to provide you with a high-level overview of the FEFP. And as I mentioned at our first meeting in January, one of the notable program areas that may be coming before our subcommittee this session is the potential of revamping the FEFP. As such, having this basic understanding in the FEFP is very important. Now, I realize I gave you all a lot to digest, and so knowing that, I would like to encourage each and every one of you during this time as we're having these conversations to get with myself and with Denise to ask questions, to get involved in this process as we move forward. I appreciate each and every one of you for continuing to have robust discussions as we move forward in this process. And with that, I would like to get you guys to lunch. I believe you are all pretty hungry. So members, our next subcommittee meeting is scheduled for next Thursday. And this concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Rep. Michael moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.